been gone for a minute, y'all, but I promise you, our inactivity was not a lack of action. We have been just stirring stuff up under, you know, like just stirring it in a belly, building this entirely new podcast. Welcome to The Ville, a spinoff of the Boom Podcast. We just had a conversation talking about how the village needs to come together and support the faith development of Black children and youth. Check it out. All right, so I'm throwing out some questions to y'all, all right? Y'all got it?
All right. So.
First question, what R&B song taught you more theology than any sermon ever has?
The greatest R&B song of all time, and that is...
Erykah Badu.
No. Keisha Cole, Love. Mm. When I tell you...
Oh, let me hear you sing it, though.
I used to think that I wasn't fine enough.
Sing, Jay.
And I used to think that I wasn't wild enough.
Uh-huh.
Come on now.
What did that teach you?
So you got to go to the hook, though. Like,
I want to sing it so bad, but that is not my gift.
Love.
Push it, push it, push it.
Never knew what I was missing, but I knew once we start, I fell.
Because you could out kissing because you're not kissing God.
Because
right?
We're not kissing God, but the affection, you know what I'm saying? So never knew what I was missing, but I knew once we got connected, when we had connection, I found what love was.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Telling you, man. Keisha Cole.
Like it.
Keisha Cole. Prophetisa.
Oh my gosh, that's
man,
good.
That's a hard act to follow.
I know, because I ain't singing nothing.
Because now you got to sing.
Yeah, you got to sing. Yeah, I'm at, look, it's the Bible say make a joyful noise, you know?
Don't nobody like my noise, though.
Everything that has a
breath.
It sounds
like it's pain. Not joyful,
right.
I would say mine was All My Life by Casey and JoJo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How'd that go?
I can never find another love.
Sweeter than you.
Right. No, but it was like all my life, I prayed for someone like you, and I thank God that I finally found you. Of course, talking about God, but, you know, I just kind of see that in my relationship with Jesus, too. Mm. Now you go all your life searching for something, and then you finally find him.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
Y'all did good. I don't know that I have a song. I have a body of music.
Okay. Mm. What's this body?
Go ahead, Candace. In true Candace fashion.
Lauryn Hill.
Okay.
I feel like the way that Lauryn Hill.
Can't be on time, God. This is she'll be on time.
You know why?
It's because
it's because she is too busy basking in the Holy Spirit. You hear me?
Come when she wants you to.
But I feel like she is the way that scripture and her this lyric ability is just introduced me to scripture before I even knew, you know, like what some scriptures were. I learned verses from listening to Lauryn Hill.
That's dope. Mm. That's dope. Miseducation is one of the greatest of all time.
It
not
is.
Gonna lie. Mm. Not gonna lie. What about you, Kimberly?
Mine is Erykah Badu. I don't know the song, but she says, you don't have to believe everything you think.
Mm.
And I feel like I connect that to a lot of different scriptures, but like one that says, like, lean not to your own understanding, right, in all your ways. So for me, it's like, I think, so... In high school, I went through this, like, really bad Erykah Badu obsession, like, phase. And I listened to that song a lot, so I feel like I was introduced to this idea of, like, I think a thing, but I don't have to believe a thing. I don't have to obsess over that thought, right? And then later, I would be introduced by my grandmother quoting that scripture, Proverbs 3.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never heard that. You got to let me hear that song. I don't have no idea what song you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. Hmm. I think it's on the New America album.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah,
if it's not, cut that part out.
All right, next question. Do you spoil the child if you spare the rod?
I do see, especially because I'm a youth pastor now, I do see a lot of kids who could use a couple whoopings.
Yeah, retweet. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't spared the rod at all. And I feel like I came out pretty good. You know what I'm saying? I feel like there's a level of grace even in getting the rod.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're able to understand that every action has an equal reaction, You know,
okay, science class.
You know, we serve a God that is a just God. So in getting the rod, we have an understanding of maybe this action requires a pop, maybe this action requires a whooping, but I can't just do something and not expect something to happen to me in return. And so that's how I see it. And I do think that is a privilege or could potentially be a level of spoiling if there's not a consequence attached to said.
I mean, there has to be some type of like, I don't know though, strategy to it. Because I wouldn't encourage anybody to like, because I see a lot of people who will like whip their kids out of anger.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes like, I think, a little toxic.
Yeah.
Because then you're subliminally teaching kids that this is the way to respond to something that makes you mad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily this is a way to correct a behavior so that you don't want to do it again.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. And that there's some type of lesson that comes along with it and things like that. Because honestly, like my dad, shout out to my dad, but my dad, like he didn't like whoop us a lot, but when he did, you felt it. But the other thing was he always sat us down too and talked to us.
Yeah.
Sometimes for a long time. And it's like, as a kid, it's like, man, I know it's coming.
Yeah.
So like, can we just please get through this part and get this over with?
Yeah. Cause I've gone back and forth with this. I have two children. We don't beat our children, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody might get jacked up now, you know? Cut that out. I'm kidding. Keep it in there. I don't care. But it's just the reality of parenting because I think that both of my kids require me to parent them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And what might work with one doesn't work with the other. Yeah. And I've seen, you know, like just, I'm gonna beat you till I'm tired. Like, how many times are you gonna beat this kid with this belt? Like, you just gonna beat them, like, repeatedly, or is it like one time, twice? Like, what is it when you say beating? What do you really mean? You know, I've been really personally exploring the concept of punishment and like, what is the purpose of punishment? The purpose of punishment is for a corrective action.
Yeah.
And if the person is already feeling convicted and they've make a decision to already correct their actions, is punishment still required?
Mm-hmm.
Like, now, some people might think that punishment is still required because of just, hey, you know, you got to pay for what it is that you've done. You got to have some kind of a consequence. But sometimes that internal guilt that you feel and that internal conviction that you experience is punishment enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really one of those for me, how is the child showing some sort of conviction based on the action that was done? And to me, that's what determines what the punishment would be. I don't think that you should have to beat somebody into submission or into respect or fear to get it right. But I tell you that I sometimes it's hard. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
I don't see the rod as like, I see it as a symbol, not necessarily like an actual like, whooping or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I see it as just like sparing discipline or sparing authority, consequences, and what it means to be disciplined in my decision making. And so, the conversation that your dad was having was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that if I'm or somebody's beating a child, like, if it has the same effect, it's just instilling fear.
I've heard you talk about your dad a lot and your parents a lot and the influence that they have played on your life. And to me, that's just, it's the where I want to be with my children is I want them to one day be as old as you are, right? And be able to talk about me in the same way.
Mm.
And I feel like the journey of getting there requires you to really be in tune with your kids are, who your kids are. How do you think your parents were in tune with who you are?
Like, they told me who I was more than they told me what I couldn't do. So like, if I wanted to go to a party, they wouldn't stop me from going, but they would remind me who I was before I went.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when I get there, I'm at the party, but I keep remembering who I am.
Ooh,
and I ain't doing
so
much there. So it was like, it's little things like that, whereas I seen other, other peers of mine whose parents were super strict.
Mm-hmm.
And so their kids felt the need to sneak out a little bit more or to do crazy stuff when they got there because all they're thinking about is what I can't do when I'm around my parents, but I don't know who I am for real.
Dang. That's tough.
The village around me as well was just as impactful. Like, I had...
Was it all preachers? Because you know your PK, like...
Yeah, actually...
You know?
I still want to relate to the people, but yeah.
Like, I want to laugh.
When I was in seminary, people kept talking about just like, oh, the beloved community. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, beloved community. Mm-hmm. Like, but I'm like, what is community? Like, yeah. Community, I don't get that. Like, and I don't get why everybody's emphasizing it so much. I don't get why there's so much weight on community. It just did not rest well with me. I just didn't understand it. And mm-hmm. It wasn't until... probably really exploring the work that we're doing with Boone and diving into the village that I was able to make a connection with community. And mm-hmm. I was like, I don't understand community because I don't understand that language. Yeah. Community language I don't understand, but I understand village. Mm-hmm. And when I think of the people in the village that was around, when I look at like, hey, who was your community growing up? Community, I don't know if I got a community. Mm. But if I think about who is your village, I see a lot of people that were both in my family, but also outside of my family.
Yeah.
Like, I think of my cheerleading coach. Like, big props mm-hmm. to her. She would take me home from practice every day, ride 2 metro trains, get on a bus, and then walk home from there. And she was like, girl, I will just take you home.
Mm-hmm.
And we developed this beautiful relationship, and she has taken me in. I call her my god sister. So I think about the different people who were around me that just expanded my view a bit.
Yeah.
Of different ways of just living and being and moving in the world that showed me compassion and love beyond my family. Because I feel like family has a certain obligation.
Mm.
But when somebody outside of your family steps in and chooses to love you, then I feel like for me, that was like one of those like, oh, so you just going, like the cell phone number that I have today was my cheerleading coach's cell phone number. I've got to give that story a whole nother day. Yeah. But she gave me her cell phone when she was going to basic training and was like, keep it. And I still got it, like, all these years later.
I think my village was inconsistent. It just wasn't always the same people. I had relatives that were kind of distant, just physically and emotionally. And my mom was a single parent, so it was just like, it was her. She was the village. But a lot of her friends and coworkers, that became part of the people that made up my village. So, like, mom had a coworker when she was going through divorce that we started calling Auntie Janet. It was not my aunt. But you know how we do, right? Like, it just... from the relationship, like, she allowed us to stay with her in her home while mom was able to save money so she get her own place and, like... to this day, there's somebody I call Auntie.
Yeah.
Like, my mom's best friend, I call her Auntie Angela. And they've been friends for over 30 years, but just the way that she kind of, like, came and loved on me and my sister, it was my mom's friends and her coworkers that loved on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before I saw my family do that.
So all of y'all are youth pastors. I mean, I will have been a youth pastor. I mean, girl, listen, I know you're not quite. They might got a youth pastor title.
My name is Kimbra.
You are essentially a youth pastor.
You're a digital youth pastor.
Sorry, she's a deaf.
We'll take that.
Right. Okay. Here we got to clarify it, right? But you still work in the church with young people. And all of y'all work in the church. What was a youth pastor's looking like for y'all growing up? Like, any kind of youth or kids ministry leader?
I think mine's was kind of unique because my youth pastor was my dad. So,
right. Shout out to Jim.
Family.
Yeah. Shout out to OG. So, but it was also kind of nuanced because I would go over to visit my dad. So it's like I went over to visit my dad every other weekend, and that's when I went to church. And so, as I got older, I realized because I loved my dad and I cared about my dad, I kind of tied my faith to spending time with my dad. So growing up, it was like, oh, I love God because the communicator of God to me was my dad. Mm. And I wanted to grow relationship with my dad, which in return grew relationship with God. But as I graduated, I had to kind of divorce that and find God outside of my dad to be able to grow in it. And so I think the dynamic of my youth years was really dope because I also was able to see my dad impact other people and kind of ride along to see him impact other people. And so I kind of got a behind the scenes of ministry while I was in ministry, mm-hmm. In a way that a kid or a student probably won't get to see because, you know, they're the byproduct of whatever it is that their youth pastor is doing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like a shift for me growing up where I was like, man, it's super dope that this person can look at our family as family. I was the, you know, family mm-hmm. that people were adopted into. Mm-hmm. Based off of something that my dad was doing inside mm-hmm. their lives. And then just being able to be impacted by that early allowed me to then see, man, that's cool. I want to impact other people and I want to have an influence in other people, which at a younger age allowed me to do that in high school and college growing up.
Yeah.
My mom was low-key a youth pastor. She wasn't mine, but she was like low-key a youth pastor before it was okay to call a woman a youth pastor. Mm. Mm. But she was over the teens at the church, and she created this name for the youth group that was Rappers for Christ. This was like the 90s, y'all.
Rappers for Christ. Let me hear a song. I know you got one memorized. I know you remember one.
So they didn't rap like
what was that?
Like, it was that type of rap. Okay. It was like rap
rappers.
Like talk.
Oh, yeah.
It was like rap like talk. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like rap. Like, gotcha. Yeah, we rapping.
She was ahead of her time.
Yeah.
She was. Yeah. But yeah, it was spelled like Rappers, like, because Rappers Delight was her favorite group.
Okay.
So it's spelled like that. But I think I was exposed to what it meant to serve youth in the church capacity because of what I saw her do. When they would have like Sunday school, like they would be just deep in conversation. I would help her sit up, help her get the donuts, like all of that. And I saw her passion for it. And I feel like that's what later led me to kind of do the same things. But I always would be like, are they talking about boys in there? She would always try to kick me out when they started talking. I'm like, why they gotta kick me out? Because I was in children's ministry. I'm like, they talking about boys?
I feel like I be doing that with my kids too. Be like, scooch your boots.
I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? But also made me excited to like grow up and get there. Like, yeah. You know, so yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember all the games we played. I don't remember all the fun things we did. But what I do remember was a consistent person in my community showing up every week.
Yeah.
Giving us love, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a few cookies and some juice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Some apple juice.
But it was so powerful.
Yeah.
Like, now that I'm older, to think that they would take their... Because I think now I have a different perspective that I'm a little bit older. I'm still single, don't have a family yet. That's not an advertisement, but...
Sliding his DMs, y'all.
678 325.
But now that I'm adulting, I know what it means to stop.
Yeah. You know?
I know what it means to carve out space and to carve out time and to go to work, be tired, and still show up consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So to see them do that, like, and know that that's the impact that I feel is amazing now that I'm older.
And that's one of the things I say that God has been really convicting me of just letting other people interrupt your life.
Yeah. Because
you can get in, it's easy to get into a routine. It's easy to, especially as a, I mean, I'm married and I got two kids, like I said. I get up in the morning at 6 o'clock, not because I want to, but because them kids got to get out of the house and go to school.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think it's easy. And then once they're gone, it's like a go. And it's easy to get into these routines of just like go, go, go. And then after school, they got to get to practice. Then they got to get dinner. Then they got to get in bed. And I got to get ready for bed myself, right? And then the next day, just do it all over again. Weekends, what am I doing? I'm running them here and there. And it's easy to not allow that pattern and those routines to be interrupted for somebody else.
Yeah.
But we've got to be able to just kind of just like, you got stuff going on, but we going to insert this person right here so that you can be intentional about showing up for somebody. Because I feel like one of the things that I'm just realizing, I feel like God is just working on me so much in so many different ways is that I look at my kids and I'm looking at like the people and how them at the age that they are now, they already have thoughts around the people who are in their village currently.
Mm.
Those thoughts are already formalized.
Yeah.
Those perceptions are there.
Mm-hmm.
They know who's going to show up. They know who's not going to show up. They know who's going to show up and what they're going to say.
Exactly.
Right? And then when they turn, 13, 15, and they got stuff going on in their life, all of a sudden people may want to insert themselves. Baby, you too late.
Yeah.
If you've been here all along, growing up, you got to be willing to insert yourself earlier on so that later on, when they really need you, like there's an easier avenue in and you're not trying to develop that trust. You're not trying to gain that relationship. And I just think of a lot of the things that we have been doing and exploring with Boone is that idea of influence a whole lot, which is the reason why we shifted our podcast. You know, we were focusing organizationally initially just on, you know, just those within the context of the church and faith-based organizations, but yet quickly realized, you know, hey, like, there's a need for us to really influence faith influencers.
Yeah.
And recognizing all the people that are in everybody's life who has potential to have an influence.
Yeah.
Like, you think about all the people we name here, the teachers, right? The people in the church, like, but then your family, the people next door, like the coaches, all of these different people come around collectively, consistently,
yeah.
and may have a different avenue into a child's life than the youth pastor.
Yeah.
But if we, the youth pastors, are the sole bench that's talking about faith and is enlightening them in that area, then...
Yeah.
What's it going to be, man?
Yeah, I think both of you guys said two important things is the consistency part, because when you don't have consistency, children and youth and people in general, but primarily youth, they really care about consistency.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I've been able to see I be at church on a Sunday 25 weeks in a row and I miss 1 week, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Then they be grilling me like, where were you at? You know, last week, because that consistency matters to them because mm-hmm. it gives them an expectation of knowing you're going to show up for me, because in every other facet of their life, people are not showing up for them or they're mm-hmm. inconsistent. They're familiar with inconsistency by the time they grow up and get teenage years and all the different things. And so if you can really be consistent in some type of way, then you have a win and influence into their lives. But then also what you said as far as the interruptions, we see that Jesus did that on a day-to-day
That's
basis.
Right. Come
like
on, Jay.
Jesus was mm-hmm. open to interruptions in all types of ways. He was on his way to heal people mm-hmm. and he was getting interrupted and mm-hmm. he was, you know, hanging with disciples and going and doing these things and kids yeah. come up and interrupt him, you know, and he took time for every single person mm-hmm. that interrupted him on his path to somewhere else. And I think that to your point, if we can get out of our routines and really care about the space and the opportunity, because the interruptions are really divine appointments that God yeah. has for us mm-hmm. to engage youth, to engage whatever it is that he puts at our doorstep, because it didn't catch God off guard that we were interrupted. We were the ones yep. that he wanted to see what we would do with that interruption that's coming to us.
Yeah.
And you know what? And so, okay, so the interruption is Kimber and I were there. You were there too. Mm. I'm not going to say where we were. We were all at this event, right? I don't know. You might know what I'm talking about. I know you know what I'm talking about. We were at this event.
Cannot confirm or deny. I do not know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So we were at this event, and there was someone who gets on a microphone and makes a declaration that just kind of like shifts the atmosphere in the room. Mm. I mean, it was a major, just like, whoosh. And we needed to tend to that moment. They needed to tend to that moment, right? But their agenda, their mm-hmm. organizational priorities mm-hmm. didn't let them respond to it with the sensitivity that the Holy Spirit mm-hmm. really needed in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in that moment, oh my gosh, I just started texting her. All kind of people were just saying all kind of stuff, right? All kind of stuff like, yeah. oh, you can't believe, you won't believe what just happened. Like, yeah. And what it did for me, it was that it planted this idea and this concept of just upsetting the agenda, mm-hmm. of upset the agenda. We were initially mm-hmm. planning on relaunching this podcast. We were planning on calling it Upset yeah. the Agenda, mm-hmm. but we felt like that was kind of a little bit too harsh, you mm-hmm. know, decided to shift it to the broader concept which we want to establish, which is the veil. But we can never let our ministry, our personal or our organizational priorities trump what is needed in the moment.
Yep.
And when we allow that to happen, then we're just like you were talking about, like that whole like we just missing major moments yep. of just
yeah.
being impactful. And so that moment for us at that event, that I'm not going to say what event it was, but it was like an awakening, y'all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like a yeah. major awakening for me of like some shifts that we needed to make within Boone, shifting from Black churches and faith-based organizations to faith influencers, shifting from focusing on ministry strategy to discipleship framework,
yeah. mm-hmm.
shifting from, you know, just opportunities for influence to advancing scholarship. Like, because that whole area, avenue of Black childhood theology, that whole area of discipling Black children and discipling Black teenagers, it doesn't exist. No mm-hmm. one is really exploring discipleship through the avenue of race yeah. and the implications and the impacts that's of right. our race on our faith. Mm. And there's so many of them. So one of the rapid fire questions that I didn't throw out earlier, right, was, is 18 really grown? Mm. Let's journey through that for a second.
I think when I was 18, I definitely thought I was grown. Mm. But I feel like grown, I don't feel like it's an age thing. I feel like grown is a, it's a independence thing. I think if you have to wake yourself up, if you got to make sure you eat, if you got to get yourself to work, you grown.
Yeah.
I think if you're still relying on people to do some of those things, wake you up for school, all of that, I don't think you grown.
Yeah. I was about to say, I'm trying to figure out if 37 is grown.
No. No. We don't get grown till we like, go to glory.
It's grown in a sense, like, of what I'm hearing it a lot of times. Interacting with young people who think they're grown as not 18, 17, 16. Mm-hmm.
15, 14,
I'm hearing
12,
a lot.
13.
I'm a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's a rebuttal to someone trying to give them instructions mm-hmm. or correction.
Yeah.
And they're like,
it's
no,
that
I'm
freedom
grown.
They're craving.
And mm-hmm. to me, it feels like this, it's so final.
Yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. I'm grown. I don't need any more growth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm grown.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the mindset behind it.
It's now, that it is finished mindset.
Now, is it, am I mature? I think, like, okay.
Yeah.
We could talk, because some people can be mature earlier and be ready for responsibility, more responsibility than others yeah. earlier. So I think that a person has the potential to arise to a level of maturity that makes them like a responsible adult at 18? Some of them can.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them aren't.
Yeah.
And that whole grown piece, though, I don't know. That's a, it's a trigger word for me. Some of my students know, like, when you say I'm grown around, they'll say it around me because I'll be like, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, because I don't, you know, the grown people over there in the other sanctuary, like,
yeah.
I was at camp this winter, and there was an altercation that was kind of brewing between two young guys. And when I was correcting him and I was trying to talk to him, he was like, but I'm a grown man. He can't disrespect me. I was like, oh, you grown. I was like, we didn't bring any grown people to this camp.
Wait, so we needed, like, but yeah, he got a permission slip signed by parents.
I was like, we didn't bring any, this camp isn't for grown people. So like, do you need to go home? Because yeah. like, this is for young people.
I got to put it in my pocket. I got to put it in the
so
back
quickly,
pocket.
I think it stopped him because it's something that I think culture is starting to teach them
mm-hmm.
that is a prerequisite for some type of respect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah. even the way you're going about it in this moment doesn't say respect me.
Yeah.
Because I'm being yeah. disrespectful right now.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I, to your point, both of you guys' points, I think that it's not a overall broad, I'm grown when I touch this number, because mm-hmm. we see that there's a lot of youth that were sheltered
yeah.
that did not know how to handle situations.
Yeah.
And then for some parents, they say, oh, you're 18, you get out of my house, don't come back, you know, fly mm-hmm. out the nest. But I wasn't prepared to fly out the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And so even psychologically, I'm not grown yet, or mm-hmm. I'm not mature yet to even understand what does that actually look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is important for us to really unpack, what does it take to get grown? What does
yeah.
it take to get mature? Because if we don't really allow there to be some parameters or some framework, then everything is subjective. I can say it. Yeah, I'm grown at 15 because I had to do this, you know, as a kid, and I was robbed of my innocence early. Or I can be like, hey, I'm not grown because I'm living it with my mom and I'm 30 and I, you know, never learned how to do responsibility. So it's like, it is so fluid to me when it comes to just the term grown or even, you know, mature.
Yeah.
With that whole general idea of, is 18 really grown? Like, going to your point of pushing people out the nest, I feel like there's this idea within some Black families where when someone is 18, you get out of my house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to go be on your own. Mm-hmm. And what that, I think, is a part of it, me feels like it's because of when you are grown, like when you're on your own and you may be considered grown, like, you're successful if you're on your own.
Yeah.
Like, you're succeeding if you're by yourself. You got your own place. You got your own place. Wow, congratulations,
that's
you know?
That's why the dudes on the dating apps be like, I got my own car, I got my own house, I got my own. You're supposed to.
Right, you're supposed
you're
to.
You're supposed to.
But I think that what it does, though, is that when we get pushed out the nest too soon, it forces us into this survival. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it forces us into this survival mentality. And we're not able to build a village and build community and relationships and love people in ways that we really need to, because our community starts to look like people who are struggling or are aspiring for the same things that we are. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily I'm expanding myself in ways. I'm trying to survive in these streets, man. You trying to survive too? Mm-hmm. Can you help me figure out how to survive? I can help you figure out how to survive. So therefore, it's like this whole survival of the fittest kind of mentality, as opposed to, you know, I'm not looking out for you and yours because I got to take care of me and mine. And the ways that God has called us to love our neighbor and the way that God has called us to love other people is not just the people who are struggling around you, who are struggling like you, who are aspiring for things that are similar to you.
Yeah.
God wants us to love everybody. But yet, if I'm so busy trying to survive, I can't love everybody because I'm trying to survive for myself. And I think that the way that we take concepts like that, is 18 really grown, and think about how it looks within our communities and how it impacts our faith. Those are the things directly connected to the Black community that we need to explore. Because there's a lot of different things that generationally that we're living in and that we're experiencing that we're passing down from one generation to the next.
Right.
And unconsciously leaving all kind of crap behind. Like, what kind of future you want? What kind of world do you want to have in 50 years?
Yeah.
You know? Like, what? So this whole, what these past months for me, since we kind of stopped the Boom podcast, picked up the Veal, it has been just, Kimberly be making fun of me talking about you just sitting in a window. Looking out the window, right? I just be staring, looking out the window and just thinking, man. But it's a privilege to be able to
stare out the window.
Seriously.
You can talk about that.
Because
you can talk about that. You talked about interruptions and disruptions and then you just brush past and like this luxury of staring out the window. You didn't mention none of that.
It's a privilege to be able to stay out the window. I think, you know, y'all know this. I was forced to kind of resign from my previous job top of this year. Forced resignation. Like, I look at what is put on the little paychecks account. It say resign only because force was not an option. Okay.
Right.
But new leadership, they had assumptions based on me choose between them or choose Boone. And of course, I chose my baby, right? Of course, I chose Boone. And the privilege to actually be able to sit now and just think, I just look back and I'm just like, yo, they weren't really using me.
Which brings me to this thought is like, because in a sense, you were somewhat pushed out of a nest.
Yeah.
Right? And in what your mind you may have thought was sooner than you would have thought, but you wouldn't have realized everything you also had you not been pushed out.
Yeah, that's true. As I just think about this, you know, like I think about Boone is in the process of doing some really, really cool things. You know, we are in a process of developing a discipleship framework for Black teenagers, something that just not exists. Like, what are the things, what is a framework for discipling a Black teenager? And we'll get to children a little bit later after this. But we're starting with teenagers, and being able to do that is super exciting. But the reality is so the funders probably want to hear me say, that's the thing that I'm most excited about. We got some great funders who are, you know, committed to giving us lots of money to do that work. So yes, we're excited about that. But what I'm really excited about, y'all, is honestly being able to sit on this couch with y'all.
Yeah.
And being able to just have some conversations with you all that other people have the privilege of hearing, because I feel like a lot of the things that I'm thinking about are just floating around in my head, or they live in my journal. I carry this thing around like it's, man, it's like it's my phone. But to be able to just sit and talk with other people about these things and let other people hear, yeah, I'm most excited about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a really dope season. So I'm excited to see what God does through us as well as us collectively with Boone, and how he's going to touch lives through the vessel that you created. And so thank you for inviting us to the couch.